Hello and welcome to the Home Assistant Podcast. As usual, my name is Rohan, and with me, I have Phil as usual. Hey, Phil.
Hey, Rohan.
And we are also joined with Peter. How's it going?
Yeah, hi. Thanks.
Good. This episode is sponsored by Home Assistant Cloud by Nabucasa. Easily access your local Home Assistant instance remotely for a small monthly fee that supports the Home Assistant and the ESP Home projects. Configuration is done by the user interface, so there's no fiddling with router settings, SSL certs, or any YAML. All right, let's jump into it. Peter, how's it going? What brings you on our show today?
Well, I've been waiting quite a bit to get on here.
I know this has been a bit of a. I'm glad we're finally able to get you on. I know we've been going back and forth a bunch.
Yeah. So. No, I want to talk to you about my Home Assistant journey and how to use Home Assistant for, you know, real stuff and real actual problem solving.
Yeah, because I guess, you know, we get a lot of people on the podcast. It's like, yeah, you know, I've integrated Hue, I've integrated my Z-Wave, and I've done all this cool stuff. But I actually really loved your email that you sent in. And I was like, wow, okay, that's a great use case. So why don't you tell us what got you to Home Assistant or what got you here today?
Maybe I'll start with just how I got into automation broadly, I guess. I'm getting older, so I was born in the early 80s, I don't know, I kind of always liked the dream of, you know, building your own tech. I don't know why, it just stuck with me. So as I think the first thing I did was back in maybe 07, my wife at the time and I, we bought our first apartment, and I really want to have a home cinema. So we bought a 4-bedroom or a 3-bedroom, had a kid on the way. So he got a room, we got a bedroom, and I took the last room as, you know, and I built an actual home cinema. Big screen, everything, like double seater.
Nice.
And I wanted to automate it. So, and I found this, I mean, we're talking like, you know, I don't know, Windows ME was the latest version or something.
That's right. Wasn't it? It was Millennium Edition. Was that? I think that's what it was called. But then they also like sort of pivoted at some point to like Media Edition as well, because they wanted to like
make it into their first Media Center Edition.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, memories.
Yeah, those are cool.
And I really wanted to use that, but it wasn't really compatible with like cable in Sweden, you know. So let's just say I had other ways to get media.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And I wanted to play that. So I got the Xbox MC. And then I found this really nifty like USB receiver, like IR receiver. I think it was called USB UIRT or something. Really generic. And then I had a program called Event Ghost. Where you could do actual automations, and they had support for this one standard of I think it was called Telbus that used 433 megahertz, you know, the smart outlets. I had those. Basically, what you could do was like on and off, but that was fine enough because, you know, I could press the play button and the light goes out, and I could just watch the movie.
Yeah, that's cool.
But I really wanted to get in, like, you know, like have real automation. So I think it was a time when SmartThings had a Kickstarter going for their first hub, and I waited for that for so long. And then when I got it, it was like, well, it's kind of an anticlimax, you know?
Yeah.
But I don't know. And then I, you know, Hue and IKEA got, you know, they released their hubs, and I basically bought everything and just tried it. And then we got a house. So I kind of, you know, from the start just wanted to like put everything in. And Hue was actually great. I think Philips Hue has been, they've probably done more for home automation than any other company, you know, in the early days at least, because they were kind of affordable. And it worked. They were like stable.
I definitely think like they've sort of kicked off the smart home scene right now, like the affordable do-it-yourself smart home stuff, right? Like all the TP-Link, the Sonoffs, I think have all been like Philips has sort of exposed that market and then want that there's people out there, hey, I want to buy this stuff, right? And sort of away we go. So yeah, I totally agree. I mean, Home Assistant wouldn't be here if Paulus wasn't tinkering around with Philips Hue, right?
Exactly.
I love hearing those stories, you know. Just so cool. But anyway, so I basically built the automation in this house for around Hue, the integration with the HomeKit, and then IKEA, they started releasing stuff, and I really, you know, it's kind of, they came in at a nice, like a great price.
Yes.
So it's like, hey, maybe I try this, and I tried to pairing them to the Hue Hub. I wasn't ever really successful. Like I could get it working, but it wasn't really as stable as using Hue's own things. But IKEA and then they released like the first blind, you know, like the first smart blind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I was like, okay, this is the future, you know, now we're talking because lights is just lights. You know, you had light automation everywhere for forever, basically.
Sure.
But just that, that smart shades, I got a couple of those, started integrating them. And then back in, has to be 2008, it was 5 years ago. I took my bike out one evening to it was like this early summer, kind of, you know, too late to get into the bathing season, but, better late than ever.
Yeah.
So I took the mountain bike out and, like an hour in, I had a fall. Went over, landed on my head, blacked out.
Ouch.
And then I woke up and I was like, oh man, that kind of hurt, you know? I got to go check the bike. Tried to get up and the only thing that moved was my head.
Oh man.
Sugar.
And after a while, I just realized I broke my neck.
Yeah.
The only thing that moved was I could swivel my head back and forth and I could move my biceps. Nothing else worked.
Damn.
Right.
And this was, I don't know, maybe 8 o'clock at night or something, 8, 9.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So I could hear people, you know, on the trail beside me. Because I was out in like the forest, but not like far away.
You weren't like deep into it or anything. You just
I wasn't deep. Yeah. Just off the trail. I could hear people. I was like, oh man, I better call for help. But when you don't have working muscles in your stomach, you can't really call. Like you can't shout.
Right. Wow.
So I could hear people go by, but they couldn't hear me.
Oh no, it's terrible.
Yeah, it's kind of. After a while, you know, the trail, it got quiet and, you know, mm-hmm. I was like, okay, maybe I better fall asleep to, because get some of the morning joggers or something. So woke up next day, you know, oh, that was a bad dream. Realized, no, it wasn't a bad dream. I'm still here. Yeah. And then I spent the day there. Just lying there. But after, I think, 22 hours or something, they found me. Rushed to the hospital, had surgery, and came out. And, you know, the doctor said, well, you're basically paralyzed from the from the neck down. You could, I could move my arms.
Right.
Like, no tricep, but I could use my bicep, basically. The hands weren't working. And then I spent, I don't know, 9 months in the hospital, doing physical therapy and everything. And I did break my neck. I crushed the fifth vertebrae. So I have a titanium cage that's hold my spine together. But my actual spinal cord wasn't severed. In some kind of miracle, I still.
Right.
So I have what they call an incomplete neck injury, like where I still have some functional left.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So right now I have one arm that's pretty okay, and I have one leg that's I'd say maybe 60% motion in, and the other one I can basically use to like a peg leg. So I can stand and I can walk, but I, you know, I kind of say like I walk like a drunken pirate, and I have the and I have the balance of a drunken pirate. So that's where I was 5 years ago. Got home, and kind of started thinking about this home automation thing. You know, maybe it's time to actually see what it can do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So a friend of mine was like, because I started, you know, working out with HomeKit and then doing that and see what I can do. And then a friend of mine was like, if you want to get sensors in, you know, maybe you should look at something else. And I got a hold of an old like micro server. It's a super micro, like their kind of half tower ones. It's crazy overpowered for what I need it for, because it's like a 16 core Xeon processor with 128 gigs of RAM. So, you know.
Maybe just a little overkill.
A little.
Yeah.
And I had a Raspberry Pi 3, so I started, you know, I started with that. This isn't really working. I just tried a server.
That's great. It's like going from a toy car to a Ferrari, right?
Yeah, pretty much. But I'm prototyping in a Ferrari, so I. It's sometimes funny. Listen to the show too, when people ask like, it has really bad performance, and I've never had that problem.
Why doesn't everyone just use 128 gig RAM server? Gosh.
No, but I mean, it's kind of one of those, when you have the tool, you know, you can start using it for everything. So I run quite a lot of things on that server now. So I got Homebridge running. It was a big deal. And I got Home Assistant running, and I moved everything over, you know.
Yeah.
Integrated Hue, started to move all the automations that I had in Hue, all the lights, got IKEA integrated. I bought one of those Texas Instruments Zigbee sticks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The CC2531, is it? Or is that a different brand?
I can't remember. I got one of the early ones. Mm-hmm. I actually have one of the Home Assistant Sky Connects, but I've been too worried to move everything over. Because it works now. Because one of the things, because I spend most of the time in a wheelchair, that's how I get around.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And when you're in a wheelchair, every light switch is in the wrong place. Doesn't matter where you are, it's in the wrong place.
Yeah.
Yep.
Usually you roll in and then you have to turn around to turn the lights on. And so that's just not working.
Annoying.
So that's the first thing I did. Like, I put motion sensors in every room.
Yeah.
And I think I go against most of you guys, because I don't use them to really turn the lights off. I basically use them to turn everything on.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's okay. Like, I have really long timeouts.
Yeah. I was going to ask, because because obviously you're not standing, right? And you can't, like, you know, it's one of those things where the lights turn off if they're after a certain time, after no motion, whatever, and you like swing your arms and stuff like that. Obviously, that's not necessarily easy for you to do or possible, depending on the situation, right?
So exactly.
How did you set your automations to deal with that piece?
For my office, for instance, I actually changed over to one of those everything presence ones. Mm-hmm. I've seen most of millimeter rare.
Yep. Yeah, that's great.
And that's working. It's fantastic. I wish I had those in every room instead.
Yeah.
The precision is just amazing.
Yeah.
So But basically what I do is I have long timeouts and I try to, I use what time of day it is to set what type of light I get. So,
right.
I always, like if you go into the bathroom, the lights always turns on and I have two lights in the bathroom. I have the ceiling light and one of the mirrors, but mm-hmm. It's one of those, you know, I think my wife got it to use it to have like get her makeup on. It's not really pleasant, so to speak.
Right. It's just bright.
It's really bright.
So
I have, I put one of these, cordless buttons from my car up. They have like the two switch. Wireless. So you can turn the lights off, turn on and off on that. And then I have like two system because there's also like a light switch on the wall. So, and I had one of those Akara in the wall switches, but everything is connected. So if you turn the light on, like you press the switch, the light, the ceiling light is on, it just turns everything on. But if the mirror light is off or on, turns everything off.
Right.
And then there's like a timer. So that's basically how I work with them. Like if you manually turn the light off, it won't turn it on again for,
right,
I don't know how many seconds.
Okay. And that gives you enough time to exit the room and stuff like that,
exactly,
as well.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
But it, you know, it gets quite expensive for something you could just use a basic motion sensor to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I actually have got stuck once. We were visiting a company and I went to the bathroom. I actually moved over to, you know, like sit on the toilet, and the motion sensor just didn't register me. So the lights got turned off and I couldn't get it on again.
Yeah.
So I was sitting there, you know, using my one good arm trying to turn on that. And this was like in the wheelchair bathroom. So I had to get my phone out and get, you know, like just a flashlight to light everything up.
Oh, no. Yeah.
So after that, I was like, okay, that's not happening at home, at least.
It's lessons in design the hard way, right? Is what don't I want and how would I rather it act, right? Is unfortunately what it is.
But that's the great thing with a home assistant too, because most of the automations that I run, like, you know, I set up a basic one, like I set up the conditions and everything. And then if I'm somewhere like where I think the automation should work, but it doesn't, like you can usually figure out why didn't the conditions actually trigger now. And you can just put it up on your phone and change it, you know, right there.
Yeah.
And you can test each condition too, right? Like, you can go, okay,
exactly.
Which condition actually didn't work, right? Like, even if you've got the automation in YAML, I really find that beneficial, right? Like, okay, here's an automation. You can see the traces. Let's just go through manually right now. Why isn't this condition working? Exactly. It's really cool.
Yeah.
The only thing I wish was that picking things in the drop-down lists on your phone, that interface is not great. But
yeah,
then again,
the drop down list, needs to be a little bit nicer, I'm guessing.
I don't know what it is either. Yeah. It's just, it's not scrollable in a like intuitive way, you know? And also, like, what I would like is, if you could write a couple of characters in, it would actually filter on those, but it doesn't really. It filters on like the first characters, not.
Yeah, it sort of does like not a whole like a fuzzy match against anything in the name. It's sort of, you've got to get it in the right order. I find even like if I'm trying to do, let's say, you know, Phil's blind, but it might be called, you know, blind Phil. Like if you do it around the wrong way, it won't show up, right?
Yep.
Not totally.
That's one of the things I would like to, would be more intuitive, I think, or. And it also comes down to, I don't know how you guys do it, but I haven't found a good way to name things.
Yeah.
In name like devices and everything.
I've tried to keep things consistent in terms of like when I'm doing like my entity IDs, I'll try and do like the name of the room first and then what it is. So, you know, for example, if it's a lot of good, like, the other way around, I'll do like living room underscore light or living room underscore blind, just to keep, you know, like all the entity IDs. So then when I am filtering, I can go, all right, it's in the living room. And then I'll know I'll only get what's in that room. I can sort of filter out from that list. Whereas if I go the other way around, I'm doing like, you know, lights, I'm going to get lights from every single room and it's not going to be what I'm after, right? So that's why I've tried to keep it, but it doesn't work out that well, right? Like I still, I'll be in my YAML and be like, oh, that's around the wrong way. That's frustrating, but I'm not going to move it.
Yeah.
Like,
exactly. And at some point you just, you know, capture by your system.
Yeah.
I'm pretty big on immediately naming things the way I would. Like it's how my brain is wired. Like even yesterday, Phil and I were messing around with the Itacen desk integration that just came out, and I added it first thing I did. Well, Phil was like, okay, let's try this. I'm like, no, I'm renaming this first to Office
Task. Come on, man. Right? Those like, random characters at the end, I have no idea what they are, you know.
So it's that kind of thing, right? I think it's just drilled into me. It's proper labeling of things, and it's just how I've always had it. But same thing, like Phil, I'll do like room name and then light, right? Or room name and then like door or whatever, right? Like sensor, like that kind of thing.
Yep. The only thing I don't like about that is like I repurpose stuff all the time. Like if I reveal it. So I have a light, for instance, that it's called Spare, and I don't know where it is anymore.
Right.
But it reports that it's on sometimes.
It's on. Yeah.
That's always good. That's funny.
That reminds me of like my random like devices on my network. I'll just go, hey, what's that IP address? Oh, it's a Raspberry Pi. Oh yeah, I know that Raspberry Pi. That's my Raspberry Pi. Where is that Raspberry Pi? And then I'll go hunting for it. Like I've no idea where it is, right? It's like plugged in somewhere reporting. Don't know what it's doing, but I can SSH to it. Just don't know where it physically is.
Yeah. That's funny. Do you guys like run Unify equipment? Like,
I don't.
They have it's kind of hallucinates device names and everything sometimes. Like if something had an IP sometimes, like, oh, okay, it's this.
You know? Yeah. Well, if you have enough, depending on the platforms you're using, if, again, obviously I deal in the enterprise wireless world, like for my day job, right? And well, enterprise network world, but I had a customer that they'd actually lost a lot of their, they'd lost one of their assets. I think it was like a laptop or something like that. And they're like, you know, we think it got stolen, whatever. And before they were going to file a police report, they actually were like, let me go log in and have a look. And one of the things we do is build a map and like you can triangulate stuff, right? Asset tracking kind of thing. And they're like, wait a second. I see it and it's powered on. Like, so it's physically here. So the guy went in and checked and it was just like on top of a cabinet and there was a bunch of stuff on top of it or something like that. And they were just like, that was almost really embarrassing when we called the police for that. So it was, we need that for home.
We definitely need that for home.
Where's my phone? Where's my remote?
Exactly. Yeah. Or what is on my, what is actually on my network and where is it?
Yeah.
Especially now where access points are coming down in price and you can actually have a couple of them. So
yeah, absolutely. That's funny, but I digress.
That's lights. That's one of the big things I do. And another thing that's, changing batteries and stuff is really hard now.
Yeah.
So I have a battery page in Home Assistant.
Yeah.
So whenever someone comes by, I kind of check the battery page and would you mind picking that up or doing that? That's really useful. It's kind of hard to do in most other systems. That's really hard to do.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but I think it's kind of one of those convenience things. Like, we don't even show battery power unless it's low.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For instance, IKEA does that. I think Hue does that on most things too. And I guess it makes it easier for users if, like, But for me, for instance, it's really, I really need to have things working. So
And you'd rather know something's at 80% versus 70%. Exactly. Like you want to know what the state is of everything, right?
Exactly.
You don't want to know, just know when it's low.
As right now, I put up on the dashboard, I have like a battery page that lists everything in what kind of categories they're in. And I use one of those cards, like battery cards. It's really nice. So like anything that's yellow, you know?
Yeah. Like,
you're coming by for a coffee, you're probably changing a battery. No.
Yeah. Which makes sense. I mean, it's not something that obviously that you're able to do yourself, right? And get help where you need it. So.
But also I started to move over to actually connect things to mains.
Mm.
So right. I especially the blinds, for instance, the IKEA blinds. One of them I took apart, just soldered on some connections on it, and one of those, you know, step down converters.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which is kind of funny. I didn't really know this, but. You know, the battery in for instance, the IKEA blinds, I think it's rated at like 7.2 volts. But if you actually give it 7.2 volts, it reports like 60% battery or something, or 70% battery.
Oh, that's interesting.
So you have to overvolt it to get it up to 100. Or,
mm-hmm.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah.
So just on that, I'm going to ask a strange question. So. How are you getting the blinds down? Are you waiting for someone to come over and say, hey, why are you here? Can you pull that blind down? And similar with motion sensors, when you decided, okay, I need to put motion sensors around the room, are they at a height where you can get to them in your chair, or have you got them up in the ceiling so it gets more, like, can see more of the room? Like, how have you decided to go about those, like, that?
Most motion sensors are just on the wall where I can, or they're, you know, I can't stand up if I hold on to something or most of them are I'd say at 1.5 to 1.6 meter or something.
Okay.
But the main, actually what I, it, because I have most of the Philips Hue motion sensors and they report temperature as well.
Yep.
And so if you put them high up, they're usually a couple of degrees higher than.
Yeah.
And I think maybe that goes into the other thing I use. It's like for heating automations. What are the things that you lose when you break your neck? It's the ability to sweat below the level, which means that you can't really keep your temperature down.
Right.
And you can't feel that you can't keep your temperature down either.
Right,
so.
Right.
You can basically get a heat stroke if it's like, you know, 26 degrees and you're there for too long.
Wow.
Yeah, it's kind of insane. It's summers are crazy now.
Yeah.
So I have this NetAtmo automated radiator thingies around everywhere. And I had to install 3 ACs as well.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And, you know, but heating automation, you know, assistant. It's actually quite nice, especially if you have a couple of sensors around where you can average out the temperature readings. So that's really nice. I think, and helpers have been a godsend because I had to do it in YAML first. And it's okay to do it for one or two things when you're doing it for every room. And
it gets annoying.
Now it's just point and click, right? Give me these two sensors and give me the average or whatever, and you're done. Yeah.
Helpers, I think helpers is still underrated. They are really great.
Yeah, agreed.
And if I could make a wish, there's one helper I would like. It's a calibration helper. I would like a generic calibration helper. Because most systems, if you have, I don't know, if you ever tried to, do you have those Mifloras, for instance?
Yeah.
The measure soil. It's like you put them in a glass of water and like 60% wet. Like, all right then.
Right. So just like a factor of like, add this much or multiply this by X, whatever.
I would just like a helper where you can, you know, And you can actually have one that you could tie to a device, so it actually shows up on the device page. So you could say, this device, this sensor, and these are the values that I expect to be, you know, 100%, 0%, or whatever it is. Like, this is the range. Just give me the, you know, rating, or give me the new calibration for
Yeah.
Which I'm sure you could do with a template sensor, but once again, right, you're in YAML, Jinja, and it's like a pain in the ass, right?
Yeah, it's not easy.
Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, for ESP-ON, for instance, you can do it, like, if you get a, you have to do it basically if you get an analog value in.
Yep.
But it's, because we do have temperature offsets for kind of, you know, many things. But right. just to have a generic calibration helper would be, it would make it so much easier. And I think you could use it in quite a few places.
Yeah.
So those are the big ones. And I think that I haven't, you know, I wasn't really sure how much they meant, you know, to actually have light working and temperature.
Yeah.
And so, do you have anything like a smartwatch or anything to help regulate like your body temperature? Like, could you have, I mean, I guess you are wearing one, but are you like, does that, can that report into Home Assistant and say, okay, like you're now overheating, let's either alert you or, you know, automatically if you're home, automatically turn on the aircon or something like that?
I guess I could. I haven't really thought of it. That's a great idea though. for me, I mean, I still have some function. I mean, I don't feel heat and cold basically.
Right.
So yeah, that would actually be quite good. I kind of notice it because I get groggy. And then I can just check, you know, oh, it's getting too, or it's getting too hot in here.
Yeah.
But most of it is automated. Like, I don't know. I think this is one of the big things we have, like, in the community. It's like, should the home automation system actually, you know, be just in the background and do its thing? Or should you have, like, is it the convenience that you can control it with your phone? Or should you control it?
Right.
And for me, it's always been, it should be invisible. It should be in the background.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
Just works.
Doing its thing.
Yeah. That's interesting. So,
hey everyone, I just wanted to take a minute to talk about the Eufy Video Lock. It's a smart lock that's really easy to set up with just a Phillips screwdriver and no extra drilling. It's got a keyless entry, so you don't need to worry about fumbling with the keys when your hands are full. Also, you don't need to worry about handing out extra keys when you're in a pinch, your kids losing them, or people copying the key and passing it around to each other. Something else I like about the Eufy Video Lock is that it has a camera built in and it works as a doorbell as well. Personally, I think the Eufy Video Lock is great for apartments or cottages where you can't necessarily add extra holes for a video doorbell. My favorite part about it, though, is that there isn't a monthly fee and your recordings are locally stored, so you don't have to worry about someone else owning your doorbell data. You can find it on Amazon, or if you want to know more, search Eufy Video Lock, that's EUFY Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
So let me ask you this then, two-part question. One is your most useful automation, and then the second one is your most fun automation. Again, they don't have to necessarily be the same. They could be the same, but what are those?
The most useful one I have is a really simple one. I have a sensor on my mailbox that tells me if everyone has opened it, and then it turns a light red on the outside of my garage.
Okay.
So when I pull up to the house, I can actually see if I have mail or not.
Nice.
And that's, it's so easy and it's so useful because especially if I'm like, I can't walk down to the mailbox. And it's not that far. It's maybe 30 meters or 40, but I have to take the car, you know. So
yeah, it's still a task
during the day. Exactly. Yeah. So I have to go down to the garage, you know, get into the car, go down there, like drive down. And then I have to, you know, look at the neighbors when they see that I took the car to the mailbox, you know?
Yeah.
No, that's my most useful one. And it's also, okay. You know, if someone comes by, they can see that the light is on. So they usually, you know,
grab the mail for you. That's nice.
That's nice. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think that's probably the best one.
Useful. How about the most fun?
Oh, I have so much fun ones.
All right, give us your top two.
Oh, my top two. It's not an automation. It's a necessary. Like I have a Stream Deck.
Mm-hmm.
You guys seen those? Like the Elgato Stream Decks.
Yeah, I've got one here too.
That one is just so useful. Yeah, and it's fun too, because you can do whatever with it, you know? So I have smart locks everywhere. So when someone rings the door, I can just press a button. And if I'm logged into my computer, you know, it just opens the door.
Mm-hmm.
That one's really, really great. And with the Stream Deck, it's, because you can customize it. So actually I have one button that's my email address, so I don't have to fill it in everywhere. So I just press that and just
That's cool.
That's great.
Like the Stream Deck, it's obviously aimed at streamers, but and if you listen to, we had Rosemary Orchard on, and she does the Automators podcast. They've done a few things for Mac with Stream Deck as well, right? Like there's so many cool use cases in the automation space that you can use this thing for, right? Like I actually use it every day when I'm using my computer at home to resize windows, because I have an ultra wide monitor. And it's, you know, a pain in the ass to, you know, get one window over here and another window over there and get it exactly 50-50. So I can just rearrange my desktop, push a button, and there's apps out there that you can take it to the next level, right? Push a button and it just sets up your computer for work mode, puts all the windows in the right place. And then, of course, you get all these extensions, right? Home Assistant, I think there's,
Fancy
you can expose anything, right? Like I've got, you know, like I can control my Sonos through my Stream Deck, right? Pause music, start meeting modes. Yeah, like really underrated device.
Yeah.
I have one of those Broadlink.
The RM4
transceivers. Pro. Yeah, exactly.
Nice.
Yeah.
So that one is, I actually have it connected, so I can press a button here on my Stream Deck. It will turn the fan on in like one of those standing fans, you know, like and you can control oscillation and speed and everything from it. So it's so easy, but that's the best automation. So that's the best accessories, you know. Another fun one I have is I have a counter on my cat box. Because my cat is usually, she's usually outside most of the summer season. And I don't, you know, like cleaning the cat box out is a real hassle, because I have to, you know, sit down on the floor and do
down,
it. It's kind of a project. So I put one of those vibration sensors on there. And I just have a counter in Home Assistant that shows how many times she's been in there.
Nice.
So that's also one other thing you might get to do when you come visit or come grab a cup of coffee.
Come grab a coffee and clean out my cat's shit. There you go.
Clean up the cat box. That's funny.
Another one I have is I have a check for my robot mower, like the mower.
Husqvarna.
Yeah,
I actually look forward to see what we do with that automation. It's quite new, or that what do you call it?
Lawnmower Domain. I was going to ask: have you started using that? Like, is it integrated with Home Assistant as a lawnmower, or is it still coming soon to part of being like properly supported?
I don't know. Actually, it's because it was a vacuum for the longest time with a RoboNeck.
I wonder, it was what 2023.9 they came, like they released it, and then
it's really only a
certain amount of, not every vacuum has been moved over to the lawnmower component yet.
Yeah,
I mean, it doesn't really make a difference, but still
Yeah. I mean, it's really no different than a vacuum, right? Like functionally, it does the same thing. Instead of edge sweeping thing, it's got very sharp blades that's cutting your grass, right? Like it's, but I don't know that we've actually talked to anybody that's owned one of these. So because it's one of those things where I like mowing the lawn, but I just never end up like doing it. Just there's so many other tasks that gets in the way, right? So it's like, what's your experience with it? Like, just give me the quick and dirty review of a robot lawnmower.
So when I bought this house, I looked at the lawn, and it's like a 3,000 square meter yard.
Yep.
Yeah.
So the first thing I said was like, I'm not mowing that. And my wife was like, I'm not mowing that either. So I actually bought the robots before we really moved in.
That's amazing.
It was just part of the house, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, this is going to the mortgage. The I don't care. It's going into the mortgage, you know. Give me the biggest one you have, basically.
That's awesome.
And it's been working awesome. It's been so good. I mean, the first year, of course, you have to do some actual like physical changes to the area because it gets stuck.
Mm-hmm, right.
But once you get that out, it's just a workhorse, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
Changing the knives once a year or twice a year and just clean it up and everything.
Yeah. The Husqvarna ones, they have the wire, right, around the perimeter, or is it GPS?
No, they have GPS now, but I have the wired one. I actually, this one wasn't even Wi-Fi equipped because like I got it back in 2014 or something. But I found this really crazy German that has built, it's kind of a hack, you know, because it's like a device that you can put into the mower and connect it to the battery, and then it connects between the like the control unit and the display. So it reads whatever the data is coming through, and then it emulates you actually pressing the buttons on the display.
Oh, wow.
Amazing.
Which is a brilliant idea.
Yeah.
You know? And he was like, I want 100 euros for this. I'm like, okay, you know, shut up and take the money.
Take it, yeah.
That's awesome.
But the cool thing about it is like it can actually read the diagnostics as well. So I installed this actually this summer. And it's reading it out, and my mower had, I think, 5,500 hours of runtime. That's quite amazing for something that only goes like 2.5 months a year, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, it's been great. And I think it's one of those things that probably, you know, the simpler it is and the more purposeful built it is, the better it just works.
Yeah. Yeah.
How do you find lawn clippings? Because I know, like, with lawn clippings, like, it doesn't have a catcher, right? So it just puts fine bits of grass along the grass. Do you find, like, it brings it into the house more, like, it makes the yard dirtier, or don't notice it at all?
If you're early in the season, and what I do is, like, when I first start it, I put it on the highest setting. Mm-hmm. So it cuts the grass, I don't know, maybe 7 centimeters or something. And then you just lower it after a couple of weeks. When it runs all the time, the clippings it actually does, it's like 2-3 millimeters or something.
Yep.
So that actually works like fertilizer for your lawn as well.
Yeah, nice.
So it's...
Yeah, it's supposed to be really good.
Mm.
Yeah, I think I haven't, like, I never do anything to the lawn, you know, I never fertilize it or something like that.
Yeah.
That's good.
Just seems like a hassle.
Here, they actually encourage you to mulch all your lawn clippings, and which is what I do as well, instead of bagging it and stuff like that. It's just, for me, at the end of the year, like right before the winter comes, so like, pretty much in a few weeks, I'll be just raking it all up and taking it out and probably doing a little bit of work, but to Peter's point, it's supposed to be extremely good for, because even all the moisture, and it helps trap some moisture in, so you're not, you're saving water, and obviously all the nutrients and stuff like that is at least that's what our government's saying, the municipal government here is saying too, right? So
the only thing though is like, if you let it run when it's like really raining, it creates clumpy. This kind of paste and just sticks and it's kind of like those papier-mâché things you did as a kid, you know, with so that's the only thing. But I got one of those leak sensors, like a generic Zigbee leak sensor, and I 3D printed a plate that catches water, and just let it run over the leak sensor. So now I know if it's raining outside, so I'm going to use that automation next year just to keep it docked whenever it's raining.
Well, that's it, right? Now your home assistant can say, no, it's wet outside, don't go and mow the lawn.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's cool.
In terms of design principles, right? What would your kind of key tenets be? Let's just say you're moving into a new house, you can 100% customize it, you can build it the way you want, light switches at the right heights, and all of those kind of things. What would, let's say, like big five, like, you know, how would you design house today? Given that you're in a wheelchair and you have restrictions.
Yeah, sure. First of all, I think like everything, you have to think about the back end. Mm-hmm. So like you have to have a stable setup. And for me, that has been I have UPSs for everything. All the tech stack has an UPS connected to it, because I have had problems with something as simple as, you know, the IKEA hub, for instance. If it loses its connection and gets a new IP, you can actually lose like Zigbee connectivity to it, or you can actually lose devices to it. And that sort of thing is just so easy to have like a UPS, especially if you have brownouts or something like that. That's one of the things. And the same thing for the server. And it can't be said too many times. It's like backup, test your backups. You know?
Yeah.
And for me, I actually run Home Assistant on Proxmox.
Okay.
So I back up like the actual instance or the virtual machine. So I back that up to a separate location as well. And then I have backups in Home Assistant as well that goes, I've set it up so it goes to an off-site location as well. Mm-hmm. So I can roll back. And then you need to test your system, you know?
Yeah.
Like pull the internet cord, see what actually happens.
Oh, 100% pull that internet cord. Yeah. It's amazing like how many local things, right, stop working when you pull that internet cord.
Break, yeah.
Yeah.
One thing I would like though, and then this is, I don't know, have you guys run Pi-hole, for instance?
I run AdGuard, so similar.
Yeah, similar. But for Pi-hole, I have two instances. I have one on my virtual machine, I have one on a Raspberry Pi that's like on a separate connection, and they can do failover.
Right.
And that is something I would like to have for Home Assistants as well.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, you can have, like, you can run your main instance, and then you can have a backup one on like a Yellow or something.
Yeah.
And if this goes down, just move over to that one.
Yeah. I was trying like very hard to get that. I had Rohan actually got me onto a plugin, was remote Home Assistant plugin, which is available in Hacks, and essentially I could link up two instances of Home Assistant, right, and share entities across them. And the idea being that, you know, if server A is pinging server B and server B goes down, then server A would, you know, turn on a bunch of its automations to carry over. But you know, when you do things like Zigbee radios, Z-Wave radios.
Mm-hmm.
When when the host machine goes down with those radios, you also lose that whole connection, right? So it was really hard unless I had, you know, my Z-Wave running on a hub, which isn't impossible to do, but then you've got to have a failover for that, right? And you just get sort of all happening everywhere. So It's tricky.
I wonder with Matter, maybe there is some there is some way in Matter where you can have like a distributed hub, basically a virtual hub that you can run somewhere.
Potentially. I don't know. I haven't looked at Matter too hardly, but there's no like single controller. Like anything, like you could have multiple controllers.
You
can
have multiple.
Yeah.
And I think that's the, but the problem is it's going to be everything else that you run that's not Matter, right? I mean, I know Matter is the cool, fun, hot topic today, but 99% of my devices that I have today, I don't support it. And I'm not going to be throwing out my motion sensors from, God, 7 years ago, whatever, because of Matter, right? Like it's, and I think that's the problem. And Phil, to your point, even you can have like multiple radios and stuff like that, but then you need to coordinate like, hey, I need my ZHA databases to be replicated and like all of those kind of things, right? And that can really be annoying to deal with. I know now on that front, there's a little bit more where you can do things like back up the database, I believe, in ZHA. I thought I saw something around that.
Yeah, you can do like backups and automatic backups every night.
And I'm talking of like the devices specifically from ZHA, right? And same thing, even I don't know on Zigbee to MQTT, or sorry, Z-Wave to MQTT. Z-Wave JS is what I'm trying to say. I don't know if that's if it's possible there, but and if it is, then it. Problem is, it requires coordination of like 18 different things there to say, okay, you need to move here, right? MQTT is actually easier to do because there are ones that have that out there, right?
And I mean, if you run an MQTT server somewhere else, you can actually have that in a failover state. Exactly.
Yep. That's probably the one piece that is the easiest, but everything else is hard.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, for sure. But the other thing, like other things that I really like is like for my vacuum, for instance. If you want a challenge, try sitting in a chair and run a regular vacuum around your house.
It's, God. Yeah.
It takes a while. So I have actually have two now. I have the Roborock S7
that
I run the automations for. And that is also one of the fun ones because...
Yeah,
I've been working from home now for 2 years, so I can't have the vacuum going. So what I do is every time I leave the house and everyone left the house, that robot runs, and then I have a simple helper that just increments the vacuum runs today by one, and then it checks that if we leave again,
Nice.
So that's really good actually. That's. What I should do is have one of those, like, you haven't vacuumed in this many days and just have a persistent persistent notification.
Yeah. That's cool.
And then, integration with voice assistants is like next big thing. I'm really looking forward to see what they do with Year of the Voice here.
Yeah. There's going to be some really cool stuff. So I'm not sure when this episode's coming out, but. There's going to be some cool stuff coming. I'm looking forward to seeing those.
Yeah, well, custom wake words are here, so that's cool. Chapter 4, pretty good. I can't believe how fast voice control is locally. So I'm really excited to see. I think next year, like I know 2023 was like the year of the voice, but I think next year is where we're going to actually be able to start seeing the fruits of the labor, right? Like being able to just go in and go, yep, here's assist, and do all this. I don't know. Are you running any like off the shelf voice assistants at the moment? Like you've got like the Amazon Echo or the Google Home. Have you toyed with those for voice control?
I have a couple of Google Homes. It's just one of those things, when English isn't your primary language, just naming things is so hard. It doesn't. I mean, I use them. I have a couple of them. So, I do the basic things like good night routines and stuff like that. And it's only like when you have kids too, like when the kids kind of figure out that I can actually control the house by saying these random things.
It's dangerous.
It's like pandemonium. But I would like, I have the thing, like, I would really like to be able to just press a button on my Stream Deck and have it, you know, use the voice. I don't even need a wake word. I need a, like a simple command that
push it
works locally, works fast, and that can be like really customized.
I wonder if you can hook one of those, like the M5 stack out of.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like, because it's got the little button in it and everything, right? So I wonder if you can actually, like, hook one of those up to a battery, like, just like a battery bank, right? Because they're just USB powered or whatever, and should last you a while. And,
yeah, that's good.
And just, like, keep it on you, right? Even if it's, like, underneath, like, a wheelchair handle or something like that, you just push it and say, turn on the bedroom light, whatever, right? Like, that kind of thing. And I think they're aiming for really good globalization support as well, right? So now you can natively say that in Swedish, right? And so it's like, that would be kind of cool, right? Like,
That would be a really cool thing. We couldn't get, like, when they announced that, you couldn't really get those devices here. They were just sold out. So I bought things to build my own in ESP Home. It's just that I have so many ESP Home projects going, so it's down the list.
I hear you. No, the those ones are back in stock, at least, I mean, for those of you listening at the time of this recording. So I just bought three days ago, something like that, right? And so they are, because they did, they weren't expecting so many Home Assistant listeners to go and be like, oh, great, I'm going to get like five of these. And which is what happened. So it looks like the Home Assistant team worked with M5 Stack to say, hey, let's get a little more of these in and do that kind of thing. So it's I think that's good.
Even though I like the idea to have, like, you know, one of those old school red phones where you could just pick it up.
The president's phone.
Exactly. Go to DEFCON 4, you know.
That's right. What that means is it just opens your garage door, right?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
That's funny. So going back to, like, kind of your principles for design, like what other things? So you said, like, have a really reliable back-end system, right? Like, power everything. What else? But what else? Like, in terms of placement of stuff and how you build different things. Like,
I mean, if I would redo it now, I'd probably run cables everywhere. You know, have cable outlets or conduits going where you can actually put a, like, a simple thing like an open door sensor or like a read switch or something like that. And especially, like, around windows. And above windows, so if you want to, I've been trying to automate one of the vents here in my office, for instance, with right now I have a fan that I can use to blow hot air out to keep the temperature down. But I'd really like to, I've been working on building in like an iris for it so I can control the intake in the winter as well. It would be so much easier if it just had, you know, cables going there. And it's also like, I really believe in, like, if you're running sensors, they should be cabled. Because it's kind of one of those things, like, okay, it's really convenient to, you can place a wireless sensor anywhere, but if you're actually, like, relying on it, it has to work. And no matter what type, I mean, if something is wireless, you have two points of failure, both the connectivity and the actual power to it.
Yeah.
And some things are just, you know, they don't report their battery percentage correctly.
Yeah.
So I have things like, it's like, where's that sensor? It's I don't know, it's probably been out for, you know, a couple of days, and you don't, like, and you don't notice it until you need it. So I think that's probably the easiest. Change, I would.
I guess especially if it's a critical one, right? And like you said, like, it's not you know, it's for, especially it's not easy to go in and change batteries for you, right? Like it's you gotta, exactly. You know, typically get a friend or something like that to get somebody to help you with that, right? That can, especially if it's high up, right? If you have like
cameras, for instance.
Yeah. So
one of those, I had to change out my camera system too.
Yeah. Wired.
Wired one, or yeah, it's a power over Ethernet one. No.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, exactly, right, and that kind of thing, like that makes perfect sense, right? Like that's, but interesting. Any other key principles that you'd say for anybody out there that's looking to do this?
I think keep it simple. It's really like start with the basic things and build from there. It's so much easier to, like, you can imagine what you think it's going to be. It's going to be like, but it's so much easier to just build a basic automation and then like refine it over time. You don't have to make it perfect, you know. So that's what I do, and it kind of iterates. I think that's the best thing.
Yeah, yeah, I hear you.
I just want to give my props to the ESP home team. And also 100%. Say, you know, it's so cool that you can actually build your own sensors and electronics and everything. I just, for me, it's, you know, I kind of like this old, you know, like the dirty high tech or whatever you want to call it, the gritty high tech, you know, growing up reading Neuromancer and everything. I just you can slap something together and, you know, use your 3D printer to print whatever casing or whatever you need. It's been so much fun. I'm having so much fun.
Yeah. And I think it was really cool that Nebucasa like picked up that project too. Right. And just kept it going.
Yeah.
It's such a good synergy.
That's actually why I subscribed. I wasn't really using any of the services like anything is that. Because I was looking around, do they have a Patreons? Like, no, but you can, you know, have this cloud service. So I just subscribed to Nebucasa, I think.
Yeah. A lot of folks are that. Yeah, I mean, I'm in that same boat too, right? I actually had my entire thing set up for out of band, and I can access it everywhere, and et cetera, but one, it's easier, and two, it supports the project, right?
And especially ESP Home, it's been, I'm looking forward to what they're doing. I mean, it's still in the early phases. I mean, they need more support for things, but I'm really looking forward to see what to do.
Well, Peter, thank you so much for coming on the show. This was really, I mean, for me, it was really enlightening too. Just again, it's not something I experience every day, so I don't really understand it, right? So it's, I appreciate you coming in and talking to us and talking to our listeners about, you know, some of the challenges and even how you kind of overcome a lot of those pieces, right? So thank you so much for that. And
thanks so much. Well, this is why we do the podcast, right? Like, it's so cool to get these really interesting use cases of Home Assistant. And I think it also reminds people, like, you know, yes, Home Assistant is, you know, geeky, it's nerdy, but there's real use cases for it out there. And like in the smart home space, it's still early days, right? Like, there's so much potential out there.
Yeah, but also I think you have to give Home Assistant, that is, if you like maintain your setup, it's really stable. It is really stable.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. So a little bit of care and feeding goes a long way, right?
That's it.
All right. Perfect. Awesome. Well, thanks again, Peter. And we'll catch everybody next time.
Cheers.
Thanks, Chris.
Cheers.
If you want to share your Home Assistant journey or come on as a guest, reach out to us at feedback@hasspodcast.io. That's hasspodcast.io.
The Home Assistant Podcast is hosted by Phil Hawthorne and myself, Rohan Karamandi. For links to topics we discussed today, check out our show notes on haspodcast.io.